had a marvelous opportunity. As Paula said, it was a hyper reality of going to this. I just wanted to show you some pictures first so you get an idea. If some of you heard about the infamous road in the middle of the river, so in case you didn't believe it, there it is. And it actually goes on past that inlet into another campground. And right about there is a little dam that's sort of banked down, so you kind of, you could, I guess if you wanted to, you could do a Dukes of Hazzard maybe once, but limestone bottom, pretty, actually it was so such that there was even a traffic jam in the river there, so I had truly never seen anything like that, and so I was glad we didn't drive, because they brought us in on a great big van so that we were up in the air. I mean, it was a couple inches deep, but going to the camp, it was against the stream, so you were splashing water. It's like kind of going through a big water puddle. This is the place that we stayed. There was the eating area was right through here, and then this was the great room upstairs, and below it was the library. It was the only place we got Wi-Fi, and all we could get was internet. We couldn't get telephone service at all. So if somebody emailed us, we could answer. This is looking out from the area where we were eating. That green is the river. And I first thought, ugh, that looks terrible. But it's actually crystal clear, and the bottom is green, both from plants, and it's a total limestone deposit. So they say that turns it green. Because we could see carp, like yay long, or catfish, I mean, that long, just swimming along. And they had boating, which we didn't get a chance to do, but they had boating, canoeing, kayaking, all kinds of stuff. So it was pretty cool. This is sort of the canyon picture. The center is actually, you can see the reflection is actually the river. So it was an amazing place. So we had a chance to just, I mean, it was so peaceful and still. Fountain there, I had sent a couple people a picture of the fountain on the first day, sitting in 82 degree weather and saying, it's really wonderful here. Well, they have the same saying as Michigan does about weather. If you don't like it, wait 3 days. And 3 days later, there's what the fountain looked like. It dropped 50 degrees and froze solid. So it took another 3 or 4 days for it to finally thaw out. So we had kind of fun with that. I'm going to get to the real sermon in a minute, but this was the gang. It was amazing. There were 11 pastors and 13 team members. So they had a team bigger than the number. And actually, two of the pastors aren't here. One of the key people in their church died while they were there, and they had to go home quickly and to do the funeral. So this was the last night. I was going to say this was our dress-up times, but then they did tell us anyone who wanted to go get out of the dress-up clothes, do that, and so half of the people ran and put on the old, that's Vineyard pastors, I guess. They had a banquet, but truthfully the banquet, it was hard to tell it from the regular food. It looked like Food Channel, I mean the presentation and everything, and amazing that special diets, there were four or five people with gluten-free diets, and so they brought the gluten-free bread, which looked very much like the other gluten-free. Well, we had lasagna the first night, so they had spaghetti squash, which we eat all the time. I mean, they gave me eggs every morning because that really helps my diabetes. They made sure I had it, unless, of course, they were serving eggs that day. It was an amazing, let me go on to let me get back. They gave us anything that we need. They said, if you need something and you don't ask for it, it's not our fault. And Paula was saying the first day that it rained, she goes, shoot, I forgot my umbrella. And we walk out and there's a pile of umbrellas there. I mean, it was like that in everything. That was the lodge. But our retreat with these folks, it's a directed retreat, which means they had something, they could keep you busy for every day, but then you could decide what you wanted to be a part of, and most people did most of the stuff. The afternoon was free time, but we always signed up for something, and I'll tell you a little bit about the something later. But people, that as far as the vineyard, the T is teams, the team members, and the P are the pastors. So they pretty well covered the United States. And so was, you know, just about everywhere but Florida and the dead center, but even they even had Des Moines, Iowa. So we got to meet a lot of folks, people, and really some of them, some of the pastors really hurting. One of them had gone through a divorce and he was 1 month out of that. And he was there. And another guy had gotten in a major car accident and was in a wheelchair for 6 months. And his church had pretty well folded without him. And he had a couple of home groups, and he was trying to discern what to do. I think to sum it up, the last night, one of the young pastors from Philadelphia, he just said, we all gave our life story. And I'm going to talk about that in a second. But he just said, after hearing the life stories, he just said, all you guys are really messed up. And that sort of is the vineyard pastor criteria. You come from people who are messed up and you minister to people who are messed up. And so, and I have to say, overall, my experience was, it really confirmed in me that I am vineyard. Vineyard is not something that you join, it's something you discover you are. And that was what we felt. This is the kitchen crew. And what, I mean, these are the cooks. Well, plus Tim is the head chef, and he's the guy over the whole thing. But these folks were so friendly. I was the first one in for coffee every morning, and they're always looking for, well, what can we feed you? We need to take care of you and feed you. And one day, Paula had, she knew all of them by first name. They took her out to a pecan ranch, and she got a bunch of bags of pecans there. And they, all of the cooks and Paula went out in the lodge van and got this. And somebody, one of the leaders said, where'd Paula go? And I said, she went to the nut farm. And he goes, what?
To which I said, who drove me there?
Yes. She did. Yes. Yeah. So, and we just had a ball. And the last night was banquet, communion, then we had a talent show in which the pastors all picked one of the team members and sort of acted them out in hysterical ways. And so it was pretty cool. But there was a joke that came. See, now I'm going to do this just for Matthew because he had asked me to. The guy who did it did a wonderful Irish accent, which I wish I could do, but you'll have to picture that. But it was two ladies were sitting next to each other at a bar, and one said to the other, I couldn't help listening to you when you ordered your beer. And from the sounds of you, I'm thinking that you're from Mother Ireland. Yes, I am, said the other lady. Where about in Ireland might you be from? Asked the first lady. I'm from Dublin. I am, said the second lady. Sure, and begorra. And so am I, said the first lady. And on what street did you live in Dublin? Asked the lady on the left. A lovely little area it was. I lived on McCleary Street in the old part of town, answered the lady sitting on the right. Faith, and it's a small world. So did I. And to what school would you have been going? Asked the first lady. I went to St. Mary's, of course, and graduated in 1964, answered the second lady. Lord be with us. I, too, graduated St. Mary's in 1964, said the first lady. The good Lord must be smiling down upon us. I can hardly believe our good luck at winding up in the same bar tonight. Just then a fellow walked in, took a stool at the other end of the bar, and ordered a beer. Beer in hand, the bartender walked over to the new customer, muttering, "It's going to be a long night tonight. The Murphy twins are drunk again." So I thought that was just, that was hysterical. So we had a great time. And we, like I said, we gave our life stories. And it seemed to just, the whole tenor of things changed as we did. We gave the second night. The couple that had to leave early gave the first night. And we told a 30-minute story each. And then they would pause for reflection. And then everyone would say what positive attributes they saw in a person's life. And so, and they actually wrote it down, so you got it all typed out. And so it had to be no prophetic things or anything. It just had to be what positive things. I mean, and you see people who have really gone through some really hard stuff. And so, and then after that, they would have prophetic words, and those were really powerful. And it was kind of amazing to see God work. And they actually recorded those so that we could hear what people said to us. And I have permission to share this. One of the guys that I actually became really good friends with from California, he was a UCLA linebacker. He was a professional fly casting guide and just kind of a rugged individual. And he's the one who had the car accident and lost his church. And he was really feeling bad about how people treated him. I mean, it wasn't even his fault. And the Lord gave me a very strange prophetic word for him. And I had to back out and pray some. And it sounded really funny. And then I had to sort of back out because then I could feel a little bit of the anger of God. But basically what God gave me to say to him was, don't let the idiots get you down. And everyone was laughing and that kind of thing. And he said, I really received that. But it was his kind of language, I knew. But God had spoken to him in that. So we had some key people in our... Oh, but before I get to that point. What they did was they started the week, the first few days, was dealing with our past. And then they moved to the present to sort of form us in how we could have a really good prayer life, that kind of thing. And then they went to a future. And it really struck me the way that they had structured it. And so starting with the past, they brought in folks who were therapists. This guy here is Chris Miller, and he was over the whole thing, but he also had a tremendous gift of just a loving people. It was really good. Somebody said, I saw her 4, 5, 6 hours, something like that. Plus we went to town with her and some others. And she was a $125 an hour therapist is what they said. And she was very good. Robbie here is the wife of a pastor in Dallas Vineyard. And she had a gift of praying over you. And so I signed up. You sign up in the afternoon, and you can go canoeing or whatever, or you can sign up for these things. And Paul and I signed up for everything we could. We needed the help. And she prayed. It's actually called Theophostics Prayer, which is sort of finding the lies in your life. But she prayed for me for 2 hours. Because she was going to explain. I go, no, I've been prayed with a lot, I thought. But she kept going, no, we got to go a little deeper. And she finally just broke me on something in my life that came from my previous marriage. And she kept pushing till she broke me. I said she should actually go to work for the CIA, and 'cause she could break terrorists. And then this lady here has a gift of praying over you while you get a massage. And so everyone signed up for that, and you got a full body massage while she's praying for you, which is a different way of laying hands on you. So we've got to deal with the past in our life and the stuff that was really kind of getting us down. And so then we sort of moved also to the future, present, I mean. And in the present, we had a guy teaching us what's called fixed hour prayer. His name was Dave Nixon. And Dave, and he's also the Irish joke teller. His group is called Sustainable Faith, but he uses what's called Liturgy of the Hours or Common Book of Prayer or Divine Hours. And you think, well, boy, I don't want some rote prayers that I just read out of a book. And his argument is, do you ever have rote songs that you just read off of the screen? And somebody's already given you the words, but it's a matter of them being inspired. Every morning at 8 o'clock, we went down and had morning prayers with him. And the purpose also was to give us something we could take away sustainable, something that we could keep doing after we left. Because the idea wasn't to give us this wonderful rest and beautiful place and great food and gain weight. It was to take stuff, get healed up and take stuff back with us. And he did a great job, along with some of the others, in teaching us how to pray. He also encouraged us to go on walks outside and all different kinds of prayer techniques to just help us in just spending more time in prayer, more time alone with the Lord every day. So it was amazing. And then we ended our time with the future, and it was focused towards the future. We had two people there. They brought in the weekend, with the last 3 days left, what they called life coaches. Donna is from where?
Houston.
That's right. She's from Houston. Paula saw her, and I saw Herschel. And Herschel's associate pastor also in Houston. Herschel's the only guy there older than me, so he's 68. In our mocking thing, I got Herschel to play. They said, they figured I was the old guy. I could do Herschel. I said, I hope I look that good when I'm his age. And Herschel said, well, you're only 2 years younger than me. I go, yeah, see, that's it. So we're going to be meeting with them for the next 3 months over the phone. They're just going to help us in doing, making some changes in our life, primarily in the area of prayer and prayer style and so forth. But also they'll cover anything. The first guy I showed you with the little goatee, Chris Miller, showed us a video. And I'm going to show you this video. It's 20 minutes long, so I have to warn you. If you don't get anything out of it, so be it. I'm not saying that people have to do what this video says at all, but it rocked my world. I was actually talking to Herschel, and he was pretty hit by it too. I guess I should show the video so that you can see what I'm talking about. Have you ever heard of these TED? I guess you could. TED Talks that are on the internet. So Matthew has. This is not a Christian video, but they did research. And the research, the light's going to go off. Let me turn this on. The research is on the fact that, what does it take to live a long, healthy life? If anybody is at all interested in living a long, healthy life. So they studied and they found four or five blue zones, they called them. And it was a place where the number of centenarians, I think they call them, 100 years old and older, were 5 to 10 times more frequent in these places than anywhere else. And everyone who was there who lived to older ages were living a longer, healthier life. They had virtually, in some places, virtually no breast cancer or colon cancer. And you'll see some commonalities that I think are encouraging to the church. But let me show you this video.
Something called the Danish Twin Study established that only about 10% of how long the average person lives within certain biological limits is dictated by our genes. The other 90% is dictated by our lifestyle. So the premise of Blue Zone is if we can find the optimal lifestyle of longevity, we can come up with a de facto formula for longevity. But if you ask the average American what the optimal formula of longevity is, they probably couldn't tell you. They've probably heard of the South Beach diet or the Atkins diet, and you have the USDA food pyramid. There's what Oprah tells us. There's what Dr. Oz tells us. The fact of the matter is there's a lot of confusion around what really helps us live longer, better. Should you be running marathons or doing yoga? Should you eat organic meats or should you be eating tofu? When it comes to supplements, should you be taking them? How about these hormones or resveratrol? And does purpose play into it? Spirituality, and how about how we socialize? Well, our approach to finding longevity was to team up with National Geographic and the National Institute on Aging to find the 4 demographically confirmed areas that are geographically defined, and then bring a team of experts in there to methodically go through exactly what these people do to distill down the cross-cultural distillation. And at the end of this, I'm going to tell you what that distillation is. But first, I'd like to debunk some common myths when it comes to longevity. And the first myth is if you try really hard, you can live to be 100. False. The problem is only about 1 out of 5,000 people in America live to be 100. Your chances are very low. Even though it's the fastest growing demographic in America, it's hard to reach 100. The problem is that we are not programmed for longevity. We are programmed for something called procreative success. I love that word. It reminds me of my college days. Biologists term procreative success to mean the age where you have children and then another generation, the age when your children have children. After that, the effect of evolution completely dissipates. If you're a mammal, if you're a rat or an elephant or a human in between, it's the same story. So to make it to age 100, you not only have to have had a very good lifestyle, you also have to have won the genetic lottery. The second myth is there are treatments that can help slow, reverse, or even stop aging. False. When you think of it, there's 99 things that can age us. Deprive your brain of oxygen for just a few minutes, those brain cells die, they never come back. Play tennis too hard on your knees, ruin your cartilage, that cartilage never comes back. Our arteries can clog, our brains can gunk up with plaque, and we can get Alzheimer's. There's just too many things to go wrong. Our bodies have 35 trillion cells. Trillion with a T, we're talking national debt numbers here. Those cells turn themselves over once every 8 years, and every time they turn themselves over, there's some damage. And that damage builds up, and it builds up exponentially. It's a little bit like the days when we all had Beatles albums or Eagles albums, and we'd make a copy of that on a cassette tape, and then let our friends copy that cassette tape, and pretty soon, with successive generations, that tape sounds like garbage. Well, the same things happen to our cells. That's why a 65-year-old person is aging at a rate of about 125 times faster than a 12-year-old person. So if there's nothing you can do to slow your aging or stop your aging, what am I doing here? Well, the fact of the matter is the best science tells us that the capacity of the human body, my body, your body, is about 90 years, a little bit more for women. But life expectancy in this country is only 78. So somewhere along the line, we're leaving about 12 good years on the table. These are years that we could get. And research shows that they could that they would be years largely free of chronic disease, heart disease, cancer, and diabetes. We think the best way to get these missing years is to look at the cultures around the world that are actually experiencing them. Areas where people are living to age 100 at rates up to 10 times greater than we are. Areas where the life expectancy is an extra dozen years and the rate of middle age mortality is a fraction of what it is in this country. We found our first blue zone about 125 miles off the coast of Italy on the island of Sardinia. And not the entire island. The island's about 1.4 million people, but only up in the highlands, an area called the Nuoro province. And here we have this area where men live the longest, about 10 times more centenarians than we have here in America. And this is a place where people not only reach age 100, they do so with extraordinary vigor. Places where 102-year-olds still ride their bike to work, chop wood, and can beat a guy 60 years younger than them. Their history actually goes back to about the time of Christ. It's actually a Bronze Age culture that's been isolated. Because the land is so infertile, they're largely shepherds, which occasions regular low-intensity physical activity. Their diet is mostly plant-based, accentuated with foods that they can carry into the fields. They came up with an unleavened whole wheat bread called Nota Musica, made out of durum wheat, a type of cheese made from grass-fed animals, so it's hot. The cheese is high in omega-3 fatty acids instead of omega-6 fatty acids from corn-fed animals, and a type of wine that has three times the level of polyphenols than any known wine in the world. It's called Cananao. But the real secret, I think, lies more in the way that they organize their society, and one of the most salient elements of the Sardinian society is how they treat older people. You ever notice here in America, social equity seems to peak at about age 24? You know, just look at the advertisements. Here in Sardinia, the older you get, the more equity you have, the more wisdom you're celebrated for. You go into the bars in Sardinia, instead of seeing the Sports Illustrated swimsuit calendar, you see the Centenarian of the Month calendar. This, as it turns out, is not only good for your aging parents to keep them close to the family, it imparts about 4 to 6 years of extra life expectancy. Research shows it's also good for the children of those families who have lower rates of mortality and lower rates of disease. That's called the grandmother effect. We found our second blue zone on the other side of the planet, about 800 miles south of Tokyo on the archipelago of Okinawa. Okinawa is actually 161 small islands. And in the northern part of the main island, this is ground zero for world longevity. This is a place where the oldest living female population is found. It's a place where people have the longest disability-free life expectancy in the world. They have what we want. They live a long time and tend to die in their sleep very quickly. And often, I can tell you, after sex. They live about 7 good years longer than the average American, 5 times as many centenarians as we have in America, 1/5 the rate of colon and breast cancer, big killers here in America, and 1/6 the rate of cardiovascular disease. And the fact that this culture has yielded these numbers suggests strongly they have something to teach us. What do they do? Once again, a plant-based diet full of vegetables with lots of color in them, and they eat about 8 times as much tofu as Americans do. More significant than what they eat is how they eat it. They have all kinds of little strategies to keep from overeating, which, as you know, is a big problem here in America. A few of the strategies we observe, they eat off of smaller plates. So they tend to eat fewer calories at every sitting. Instead of serving family style, where you can sort of mindlessly eat as you're talking, they serve at the counter, put the food away, and then bring it to the table. They also have a 3,000-year-old adage, which I think is the greatest sort of diet suggestion ever invented. It was invented by Confucius. And that diet is known as the Hara Hachi Bu diet. It's simply a little saying these people say before their meal to remind them to stop eating when their stomach is 20% full.
80%.
It takes about a half hour for that full feeling to go travel from your belly to your brain. And by remembering to stop at 80%, it helps keep you from doing that very thing. But like Sardinia, Okinawa has a few social constructs that we can associate with longevity. We know that isolation kills. 15 years ago, the average American had 3 good friends. We're down to 1.5 right now. If you were lucky enough to be born in Okinawa, you were born into a system where you automatically have a half a dozen friends with whom you travel through life. They call it a moai. And if you're in a moai, you're expected to share the bounty if you encounter luck. And if things go bad, a child gets sick, a parent dies, you always have somebody who has your back. This particular moai, these five ladies have been together for 97 years. Their average age is 102. Typically in America, we've divided our adult life up into two sections. There's our work life, where we're productive, and then one day, boom, we retire. And typically that has meant retiring to the easy chair or going down to Arizona to play golf. In the Okinawan language, there's not even a word for retirement. Instead, there's one word that imbues your entire life, and that word is ikigai. And roughly translated, it means the reason for which you wake up in the morning. And for this 102-year-old karate master, his ikigai was carrying forth this martial art. For this 100-year-old fisherman, it was continuing to catch fish for his family three times a week. And this is a question. The National Institute on Aging actually gave us a questionnaire to give these centenarians. And one of the questions, they were very culturally astute people put the questionnaire. One of the questions was, what is your ikigai? They instantly knew why they woke up in the morning. For this 102-year-old woman, her ikigai was simply her great, great, great granddaughter. Two girls separated in age by 101 and a half years. And I asked her what it felt like to hold a great, great, great granddaughter. And she put her head back and she said, it feels like leaping into heaven. I thought that was a wonderful thought. My editor at Geographic wanted me to find America's Blue Zone. And for a while, we looked on the prairies of Minnesota, where actually there's a very high proportion of centenarians, but that's because all the young people left. So, so we turned to the data again, and we found America's longest-lived population among the Seventh-day Adventists concentrated in and around Loma Linda, California. Adventists are conservative Methodists. They celebrate their Sabbath from sunset on Friday till sunset on Saturday, a 24-hour sanctuary in time, they call it. And they follow five little habits that conveys to them extraordinary longevity, comparatively speaking. In America here, life expectancy for the average woman is 80, but for an Adventist woman, their life expectancy is 89, and the difference is even more pronounced among men, who are expected to live about 11 years longer than their American counterparts. Now, this is a study that followed about 70,000 people for 30 years, Sterling study, and I think it supremely illustrates the premise of this Blue Zone project. This is a heterogeneous community. It's white, black, Hispanic, Asian. The only thing they have in common are a set of very small lifestyle habits that they follow ritualistically for most of their lives. They take their diet directly from the Bible, Genesis chapter 1, verse 26, where God talks about legumes and seeds, and on one more stanza about green plants, ostensibly missing his meat. They take this sanctuary in time very serious. For 24 hours every week, no matter how busy they are, how stressed out they are at work, where the kids need to be driven, they stop everything and they focus on their God, their social network, and then hardwired right in the religion are nature walks. And the power of this is not that it's done occasionally, the power is it's done every week for a lifetime. None of it's hard, none of it costs money. Adventists also tend to hang out with other Adventists. So if you go to an Adventist party, you don't see people swilling Jim Beam or rolling a joint. Instead, they're talking about their next nature walk, exchanging recipes, and yes, they pray. But they influence each other in profound and measurable ways. This is a culture that has yielded Ellsworth Whareham. Ellsworth Whareham is 97 years old. He's a multimillionaire. Yet when a contractor wanted $6,000 to build a privacy fence, he said, for that kind of money, I'll do it myself. So for the next 3 days, he was out shoveling cement and hauling poles around. And predictably, perhaps, on the fourth day, he ended up in the operating room. But not as the guy on the table, the guy doing open-heart surgery. At 97, he still does 20 open heart surgeries every month. Ed Rawlings, 103 years old now, an active cowboy, starts his morning with the swim, and on the weekends he likes to put on the boards, throw up rooster tails. And then Marge Deton. Marge is 104. Her grandson actually lives in the Twin Cities here. She starts her day with lifting weights. She rides her bicycle. And then she gets in a root beer colored 1994 Cadillac Seville and tears down the San Bernardino Freeway, where she still volunteers for 7 different organizations. I've been on 19 hardcore expeditions. I'm probably the only person you'll ever meet who rode his bicycle across the Sahara Desert without sunscreen. But I'll tell you, there was no adventure more harrowing than riding shotgun with Marge Deton. A stranger is a friend I haven't met yet, she'd say to me. So what are the common denominators in these three cultures? What are the things that they all do? And we managed to boil it down to 9. In fact, we've done 2 more Blue Zone expeditions since this, and these common denominators hold true. And the first one, and I'm about to utter heresy here, none of them exercise, at least the way we think of exercise. Instead, they set up their lives so that they're constantly nudged into physical activity. These 100-year-old Okinawan women are getting up and down off the ground. They sit on the floor 30 or 40 times a day. The Sardinians live in vertical houses, up and down the stairs. Every trip to the store or to church or to the friend's house occasions a walk. They don't have any conveniences. There's not a button to push to do yard work or housework. If they want to mix up a cake, they're doing it by hand. That's physical activity. That burns calories just as much as going on the treadmill does. When they do intentional physical activity, it's things they enjoy. They tend to walk, the only proven way to stave off cognitive decline, and they all tend to have a garden. They know how to set up their life in the right way so they have the right outlook. Each of these cultures take time to downshift. The Sardinians pray, the Seventh-day Adventists pray, the Okinawans have this ancestor veneration. But when you're in a hurry or stressed out, that triggers something called the inflammatory response, which is associated with everything from Alzheimer's disease to cardiovascular disease. When you slow down for 15 minutes a day, you turn that inflammatory state into a more anti-inflammatory state. They have vocabulary for sense of purpose. Ikigai, like the Okinawans. You know, the 2 most dangerous years in your life are the year you're born because of infant mortality and the year you retire. These people know their sense of purpose and they activate it in their life. That's worth about 7 years of extra life expectancy. There's no longevity diet. Instead, these people drink a little bit every day, not a hard sell to the American population. They tend to eat a plant-based diet. Doesn't mean they don't eat meat, but lots of beans and nuts. And they have strategies to keep from overeating, little things that nudge them away from the table at the right time. And then the foundation of all this is how they connect. They put their families first, take care of their children and their aging parents. They all tend to belong to a faith-based community, which is worth between 4 and 14 extra years of life expectancy if you do it 4 times a month. And the biggest thing here is they also belong to the right tribe. They were either born into or they proactively surrounded themselves with the right people. We know from the Framingham studies that if your 3 best friends are obese, there's a 50% better chance that you'll be overweight. So if you hang out with unhealthy people, that's gonna have a measurable impact over time. Instead, if your friend's idea of recreation is physical activity, bowling or playing hockey or biking or gardening, if your friends drink a little but not too much and they eat right and they're engaged and they're trusting and trustworthy, that is going to have the biggest impact over time. Diets don't work. No diet in the history of the world has ever worked for more than 2% of the population. Exercise programs usually start in January. They're usually done by October. When it comes to longevity, there is no short-term fix in a pill or anything else. But when you think about it, your friends are long-term adventures, and therefore, perhaps the most significant thing you can do to add more years to your life and life to your years. Thank you very much.
Sure. So I don't know what you thought of that, but like I said, it sort of rocked my world. The things that were really outstanding, I mean, it's really, church is a good idea. I hate to say it, but I don't hate to say it actually, but, that he had named these 9 ways of living longer. He had, you know, is moved naturally, cut calories, plant-based diet. And he did say, I think, if you heard him, that they're not saying you have to be a vegetarian at all. I mean, you could eat normal meat. I mean, the one gang he said had, the very first folks were shepherds. I'm sure they ate a lot of lamb and mutton and so forth. Drink red wine, well, okay, if you have to, I'll do that. Determine your life purpose, downshift. I mean, this downshifting is a lot. We didn't get to use it as much as we wanted to, but there was time for silence and solitude. We went for a walk. It's those kinds of things. And they're not huge dramatic. We realized we probably are never going to retire. So that's actually okay. I mean, a number of folks there told us how young we looked. I would attribute that to this church. It's how gray I look too, but it's how young I look. And so if you look at these things, he had this kind of a diagram. If you're interested, the last screen I printed out on these sheets, and this screen I printed out on this on the back side. And I've got copies of this. But if you go back to this, you notice the 4, and I was actually thinking about it, I think even the number 5, life purpose, really all has to do with a church body, a group of people that you do stuff with. And as I'm watching this, I'm thinking about some of the interactions that I heard while we were gone. Matthew going in the hospital and Chris and Steve going to visit him. I think there were some other things that happened that I'll leave private, but there's a way of covering. I mean, as we grow, we're looking for people who just want to do this stuff together, who want to live together, belong, participate in a spiritual community. I mean, this is Council on Aging and National Geographic. They have, probably if anything, a desensitive to having it come out that religious communities are the ones that have a big factor in it. Put loved ones first, make family a priority, pick the right tribe. It's striking to me because in the vineyard, amongst the pastors especially, I hear they describe the vineyard as being our tribe. It's our kind of folks that live together. And so I'm just thinking that I wanted to show this because I want to find a way to do this more in my own life. Another thing that Paula and I do, yesterday she went to a party with some friends, Christmas party with some friends, women who she's been meeting with them for 20 years. And we had the ladies in our wedding. That was the lady side of the wedding. And I have some guys who were in my side of the wedding who I've been for 20 years having breakfast with. Unfortunately, one of them's getting old enough he misses half of them. But there's a way in which there's just a healthy thing. Now, as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, this is really not, we're not too late. For me, diet was the big one that hit. And I actually went on a thing called a Way Down Workshop that was a Christian diet program. And the basis of it, and it worked. I lost, I don't know, 15, 20 pounds. Why am I not on it anymore? I just got distracted and quit doing it. I mean, that simple. I mean, I don't have a reason, but it was like this. You could eat, whenever you got hungry, you could eat. And then you ate until you were almost full and you waited to make sure. And you actually took the meals and you put it on the plate and you cut it in half, the amount. And you ate half of it. And then you stopped and waited 10, 15 minutes and just, you know, socialized or whatever. And then if you were still hungry, if you felt like, okay, I didn't get enough to eat, you cut that half in half and you ate that. And I found, you know, often, especially if I went out to the restaurant, I would only eat half, and that was all I ever needed. And for me, that's one of the things that I want to head towards. But I also want to see our church in this faith-based community, the downshift, people who want to learn how to do it, we're going to do some the fixed hour prayers, it's called spiritual disciplines, and it's silence and solitude. It's that 15 minutes he was talking about every day to reverse the stress in your life. I mean, I have this because of cortisol. And that's stress. And I realized my eating is stress. And that is absolutely no revelation to me. I know that. Food is my drug of choice. But it really, looking at this, and I go, I'm able to make the adjustment to red wine. I think I can do that okay. But, and then again, it's not drink too much. So anyway, it just struck me so strongly. And it was something they did where they were encouraging us. If we want to go, we're running a marathon, not a sprint in life. And the more that we can space things out, one of my goals going there was to slow down. I wanted to slow my life down. I feel like I don't have too much to do. But when I do things, I do them in spurts as fast as I can. Even I eat as fast as I can. Paula, we sit down to eat, and she usually goes and heats up her food, and when she comes back, I'm just about done eating. And I even taste it sometimes. And so the thing that strikes me is we can have a life where that flourishes. Chris Miller, the guy who led this, has a whole thing he's developing on how to have your life flourish. And it's basically the past, present, future model. And we can do that in our own lives. And I want to do more of people sharing their testimonies. They told me that it's not always safe in an open public like this. We signed an agreement we wouldn't share without permission anything anyone said. But we can share our testimonies, and then I'd like to speak into people who share and try that out and see how it is. I did a sermon a couple of weeks ago on encouraging one another. And that was one of the big outstanding things that we heard at this retreat, was just encouraging one another. I want this to be a place that brings life to people. And I want to do more of that kind of thing. I've always wanted to do the small groups, but it's just another thing to do. So I'd like to have it be sort of natural based. You guys are getting together after Alpha and continuing that on, and whatever it takes. And of course, lots of people aren't here today. I'm going to pass this video on to them. But it's just where I'm at. This has just struck such a chord with me, I had to share it. This is probably one of the few, if only, sermons I gave without giving you a scripture. In any scripture reference, but I bet I could find them. And I actually may go digging after them to find them, because if it's the truth, it's in the Bible, and God is calling us to this kind of thing. So, I don't know, any sense? Anyone? Did this strike anyone? I mean, please don't be put on a spot. But was there any parts of it? I mean, it doesn't have to be the whole. I mean, part of it is a little bit of a fairly significant change in lifestyle, but yes.
What struck me this time was the community, how important it was to not isolate, to
yeah.
be alone, but to
Yeah. And having, I think having the Lord as the basis, which I think is really most of these communities. You know, Okinawa is arguably a little different, but similar, actually. And I don't think it means that you have to be living in the 18th century either. I don't think that's what I heard in all this. I mean, the Seventh-day Adventists live a normal life in Southern California. Well, maybe it's not completely normal from what we saw there. But, again, I mean, just so we're going for walks outside. We're going to take time to just be quiet. Try that for even 5 minutes. It'll drive you crazy because it seems like, I thought of this to do and I got that to do. And so then you got to take a notepad with you and just write down whatever comes to your mind and leave it until you get done. But it's a prayer time. That's where this fixed hour prayer, if you're fully into it, which I'm not and probably won't ever be, but there's seven times a day that you pray. When you see the Bible saying they went to the temple in the ninth hour or whatever, that's their fixed hour prayers that they did back then. And they all did it together as a people. The morning prayers, the evening prayers, so that they had that drilled into their lifestyle. And it gives you so much more life that really flourishes. So.